Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Coach Conversations, sponsored by the Phoenix Chapter of the International Coach Federation. My name is Catherine Halpin. I'm your host this afternoon. I'm very pleased to introduce you all to Lillian Curry. Lillian is a combination of a successful business professional from New York City with an equestrian who is the happiest on a horse. She reinvents work styles for high-performance leaders across the United States with her integrated approach called Dare to Fly. Partnering with Lillian ensures greater effectiveness, impact, and influence, and cultivates business professionals' authentic leadership style and presence in results-driven organizations. With 20 years in sales and marketing, Lillian founded and ran her own printing company for 13 years, sold it to follow her passion, which is to make a difference in the business world through her work. She founded Pegasus Pathways in 2001 to specialize in transformational leadership development. Lillian is a certified executive coach, workshop facilitator, trainer, speaker, author, and philanthropist, and maintains her credentials as a certified integral coach, CIC, with New Ventures West Coaching School, by the way, one of the premier coaching schools, in my opinion, and as a professional certified coach with the International Coach Federation. Pegasus Pathways is also a WBE, a Women Business Enterprise, certified with WBEC West since 2010. Lillian left the canyons of New York City and followed her heart to the desert and now lives in Gilbert, Arizona. She adopted her Arabian gelding, Casanova, 4 years ago, and he's been winning ribbons with Lillian on board, a dream come true for this Brooklyn girl. We're so happy to welcome you to our Blog Talk Radio show, Lillian. Thank you so much for making time in your busy calendar to join
us. Well, Catherine, I'm thrilled to be here with you. You are just one of the most energetic professional women I know, and I'm so excited to have this conversation with you today.
Well, thank you, thank you, thank you. It's an honor and a privilege to be here. So let's talk a little bit more about Brooklyn. I'm always fascinated by where people grew up and how that shapes and impacts them in their life, and especially coming from New York and Brooklyn of all places. So tell us about your early life in Brooklyn. What was that like?
Well, I'll start out tying several little threads together. I came out of the womb in Brooklyn, New York, at the foot of the Verrazano Bridge, came out of the womb wanting a horse. I had that horse gene in me from that moment.
Yeah.
My parents didn't know what to do with me. I went to school in Brooklyn. I took a big, huge leap and crossed the river into Manhattan to go to Hunter College. And that's what gave me my first taste of Manhattan. But in my 20s, when I got married, I moved out to Long Island and was in the suburbs. And it was the suburbs, and that marriage didn't work. So I moved into Manhattan I was going to dabble, just have a taste of living in Manhattan. And I stayed there for 20 years. I loved it.
Yes,
so
I'm
one of those real New Yorkers. You can tell
yes.
by the accent, right?
Yes, yes, and they have had that Brooklyn experience, the Long Island experience, and the Manhattan experience. I mean, you have a depth that even many New York City people do not have.
Well, that's true. And you know that song, if I can make it there, I can make it anywhere.
Right.
Really there's a pride that I have about being a New Yorker, even though now I'm transplanted and living in Gilbert, Arizona.
Yeah, we're so happy that we were able to get you out here. Arizona needs leaders like you, Lillian. We need it for a variety of reasons. I'm very, very happy that you chose Arizona to make your home. Well, tell us some more about your background as a print shop owner, and then before that in sales and marketing. What got you into sales and marketing, and how have you made these transitions over your career?
Well, I'll tell you, very few of the transitions in my career were well thought out and intentional.
Mm,
I started out as, and really that has impacted my work, Catherine.
I'm sure.
What happened was I started out as a secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Working for a major southern-based textile mill. and kept getting promoted to the point where I was the first round of affirmative action, and they put me into sales. And I had never had any sales training. But from there, I sold everything from, for that company, sheets and towels to the military, but then found out I could sell and went on to sell commercial heating oil, quilted placemats and napkins, advertising space, and now I figured out I could sell anything, but I needed to go for career counseling. I was never leveraging any of my relationships or my knowledge. So career counseling got me to determine three criteria that I wanted in my next job. And I went for a search for about a year and a half and ended up with a headhunter who sent me into a business forms company. And I have to admit that I was thinking small. I thought dry cleaner tickets. I said, no, you're thinking too small. And so he forced me to go on to this interview, and that changed my life. I was in the printing industry for 20 years. I started out with that. I got started with the business forms company, then went to work for a small startup, helped them grow, and then started my own company and had that for 13 years. I bought my partner out after 9. There's nothing that you can throw at me in the business world that I haven't experienced. I've worked in large companies, small companies.
And from being a secretary and being, you know, kind of behind the scenes doing the administrative things that are so critical, and utmost respect for all of the executive assistants out there in the world, and then to go into sales and marketing and learn how to work with people and sell, and then to go into the printing and grow, have your own business, that's amazing. You should be, even before you found the coaching, you should have, I would imagine, had a tremendous sense of accomplishment.
Well, I did, and I was proud of my accomplishments. Once I went for the career counseling, I got intentional. Mm-hmm. When I had the objectivity, and that's what I bring into my coaching, and I know that you do the same, when you get intentional about what you want to do, not only for the short term but for the long term, mm-hmm. life starts to take on a magical quality that is so delicious.
Yes, that's right. This would be a great time for you to say more about that, because many of our listeners might not have been exposed to that concept, Lillian, and I know they'd appreciate hearing your perspective on the power of being intentional. So what else might you say about that?
Well, Catherine, you know, you complimented me on my choice of coaching schools. So when I chose New Ventures West, it was because I was just going to dabble. I had started supporting other business owners when I had bought my partner out in the printing company and felt the loneliness of running my company by myself.
Yeah.
Even when you're surrounded by people, you're lonely in the world. And so I started joining business organizations like NABO and Rotary, and found myself naturally supporting other people, and something was working, but I didn't know what.
Mm.
And when I started shopping around for coaching schools and landed in New Ventures West, they teach an integrated methodology, and that's why I'm also a certified integral coach,
mm-hmm.
that really talks about integrating all aspects of your life and setting goals, not just quantitative goals, but qualitative goals in your life in an integrated way. And I've dubbed that Dare to Fly and, you know, the company's Pegasus Pathways and all of that. But when you get clear on what you want and really get clear, I think it is the most critical question that we coaches ask all of our clients, whether we're life coaches or career coaches or executive coaches or business coaches. What do you want? And people so often do not know the answer to that.
That's right. That's right. You're exactly
right. Isn't that just a shame?
It's a terrible, terrible shame. It's a terrible, terrible shame. So once they can articulate what they want, then you're able to facilitate them going after that by using the power of being intentional. Right?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't want to put words.
You can't have the intention without knowing what you want.
Right, Right. You're so right. Well, what were those pivotal experiences that led you from being a business owner? You know, you said you were coaching and counseling and consulting probably with your colleagues in Rotary and in NABO. But what were some of those pivotal experiences that really made you take that leap?
Well, the defining moment was I was working with a man who had only worked for Fortune 100 companies, very successful executive, but he was a minority man who wanted to start a venture capitalist firm. And he knew what to do. He knew how to get the money. He knew how to get the investors. He knew all of the legalese. He knew it all.
Mm-hmm.
What he couldn't come up with was why anybody would want to give him the money.
Mm.
He had always had a Fortune 100 name on his business card. And
yeah.
Now it was so it was this whole paradigm shift that he had to go through. And we were I was just talking with him. Again, this was before I even knew about coaching or what it was. And I and two others were sitting there working with him. And really, it was in Midtown Manhattan, and somehow, I really don't know and can't remember what I did or what I said, but the next thing I knew, he was flinging up the window and yelling out to Madison Avenue, "I'm getting this money, I deserve this money,"
and it was this whole
big shift. It was really, you know, if I can ever make a movie of my life, that would be one of the moments.
Yeah.
So, to fast forward, we were all leaving, you know, some block was lifted from him,
yeah.
And we were all going down in the elevator, and the three of them turned to me and said, "Lillian, you've missed your calling. You're a coach." And I literally, body language, everything, put my hands up, said, "No, I'm fine. I'm happy in the printing business."
Mm.
And from that moment on, everywhere I went, I was meeting coaches, people who had coaches. I was getting invitations to coaching seminars in the mail. It was like suddenly this whole thing opened up to me.
Right.
And
right.
That was the defining moment of, if that could be my life, is where
yeah.
I make a difference with people.
Right.
And get paid for it.
Right.
What could be better than that?
Right.
I didn't, and Catherine, I wasn't burnt out with printing. Not
mm-hmm.
until I found the new passion. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't looking for something else. Talk about
right.
lack of intent. I was not
right,
looking.
Right. Like you said, it, none of it was well thought out. But what I love about your story, Lillian, is that this man was at the pinnacle of success in Fortune 100 companies and had all of those resources that come with those big jobs and all
mm-hmm.
of those opportunities and experiences. And even with that, he could not see the possibility for himself, but you held his hand and helped him see that possibility.
Yes. And Catherine,
wow.
This is what I now, when I can work with people and make that paradigm shift intentional, I didn't know what I did that night. I really don't. I still can look back and say, I don't know what I said, I don't know what I did.
Right.
You know, and the good news of that story was he went on and started that company and grew it and sold it, and you know, he's on to the next thing now. So,
and
very,
you know,
exciting.
Very, very, very exciting. We all say, you know, we as coaches work with successful people to have their success come to them more strategically, more effortlessly, more systematically. But that really is an extraordinary story. I mean, he was so successful, and you helped him get to that next level.
Yes. Yes.
Congratulations. That's great. Now,
how
did you find... Oh, go ahead.
No, you go on. I'm just, you know, loving the moment all over again.
Uh-huh. Sure. By telling the story, yeah, you get to see it sometimes even from a new perspective. Well, now, how did you settle on New Ventures West, given that there are so many coach training schools out there? Tell us about that process.
Well, yeah, that was an interesting process. When I told you that I was getting invitations for coaching seminars,
mm-hmm.
a lot of them were from Coach U and other things. And Coach U at the time was really the only one I knew about.
Mm-hmm.
And I could take teleclasses, and I could make it very convenient because, as I said, I was not looking for a career change. I thought if I could do this dabble on the side, fine, I could take some teleclasses. But then something in me said, Lillian, you've reached this stage of your life. Go for the best. And somehow, Catherine, I found a website that ranked all of the coaching schools, coach training schools at that time.
Uh-huh.
And I went to this, and it, at the time, and I have tried to find it since, and I can't find it. It was called Peer Resources, and they ranked all the existing coaching schools at the time, and the highest possible score on criteria that they listed was 130.
Uh-huh.
And the Coach U, which was the default that I was going to go for,
sure,
had like about a 65 score, and to me that's failing.
Right.
You know, I know it was somebody else's criteria,
right,
but, you know, I wanted, so I went to the top of the list.
Uh-huh.
And I called the first four schools and said to each one of them, and I researched, each one had a different program, and New Ventures West was at the top of the list, and they had a year-long program that was very expensive, very time-consuming, and they were in San Francisco. Here I was still in New York.
Right.
And I called them up and I said to the person who answered the phone, I need some questions answered. Why should I come to San Francisco and spend all that time and money and travel?
Right.
To go back and forth to come to your school. And the person who answered the phone said, because we believe coaching is an interpersonal dynamic and we want you here. I was blown away.
Right.
I had never, first
heard
of all, they hand an objection so succinctly.
Right.
And the second thing was, I loved the reasoning.
Right.
So I signed up right then and there.
Right. Oh,
and I came to that, you know, so you and I are both certified coaches with ICF.
Mm-hmm.
My continuing education with New Ventures West meets the ICF criteria for continuing education.
Well, I know that New Ventures West is an outstanding training school, and I love that explanation. I love how they converted
you. Where did you go, Catherine?
I did Coach U. In 1995, when I decided to become a coach, to my knowledge, there were only two coach training schools. CTI, the Coaches Training Institute in San Francisco, and Coach U. Now, I think maybe the Hudson Institute, and there were other things that were more established educational institutions, but they might not have been calling it coaching at that time. And so I found Coach U through a magazine article, and so then I found Thomas Leonard, and he didn't bother to tell me about CTI or anything else, and so of course not. He was an excellent salesperson, so I did Coach U, but it was just what I needed at the time. And I had a fascinating conversation with Otto Siegel this morning, and Otto was our guest a few months ago, and Otto was asking me some questions about my genius, because that's his expertise, and I said, I think I'm a better coach over the telephone. I think for often the clients feel more anonymity, and so therefore it's a little bit safer. And then I know I'm a lot more focused and intentional by being over the phone. I'm not distracted by being in somebody's office. And then the other thing is I think I'm even more effective at creating that opening for them to share. People often tell me, I don't know why I'm telling you this. So I get people to feel comfortable. So for me, the telephone really works, but I totally get what New Ventures West was saying, and it is such a profoundly intimate relationship. And so
coaching always is.
Yes. That's fascinating. Well, thanks for sharing.
Well, and so when I made the transition moving from New York to Arizona, I had to go straight to telephone coaching, which I had never done. I had always done it in person.
Sure, in Manhattan, it was easy to do, probably.
Exactly.
So
well, now I do the combination.
Uh-huh.
I barely work with a client that I've never physically met.
Uh-huh.
Because in the integrated methodology, that physical presence is such an important part of the whole package.
So say more about that. What do you do in the face-to-face sessions that's different than the telephone sessions?
You get to see what a person is communicating before they even open up their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Just the body language, how they hold themselves, even their hygiene,
mm-hmm.
how they walk, how they talk, how they treat other people. Do you remember that E.F. Hutton commercial?
Everybody
falls silent.
Right.
There are people that walk into a room and they have a presence.
Yes.
That can be cultivated, and that has to be cultivated from the inside out.
Yes.
And so if you don't know what the outside is looking like, you can always access more from the inside, but it has to be an autonomous, cohesive, authentic package.
That's right. So, I totally see that.
Yeah, so that's what I do. I have to get that sense to somebody.
That's so great. So that leads us beautifully into my next question, which is to share, we were interested to know, Lillian, what's your philosophy of coaching?
I know that everyone has the answers within. Not just the answers to the big question called, what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
But what they want to do, how they want to be, what options are available to them, what choices. And so often, my coaching is just about getting them, my clients, to develop habits to see what's available for them, see their choices, and then build up the confidence and the courage to take effective action grounded in their own self-awareness, self-knowledge.
Yes, yes, yes,
Every
yes.
once in a while I do, and I know this is not quite the coaching definition according to ICF, every once in a while I have to tell a client, just do it.
Yes, yes.
You know, because they have to trust me at some level, and left to their own devices, they won't. They have to go into a place that is unknown to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so coaching is definitely an interruption into somebody's life.
Right.
But it's also using their life as a laboratory.
Yeah, I love that description, using their life as a laboratory. Because we don't know the solutions. We can't give them the three steps, like you said.
No. Oh, wouldn't that be wonderful if we could? But people, you know, I think that you and I both know that one of our greatest frustrations is that we can, and this is one of my horse sayings, is we can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink.
Uh-huh.
And our clients, we can know what's best for them, but if we can't bring them to that place of stepping into it, then, and we can, it may take us a while to have us help them get to that place of stepping into what's next.
Right.
But that's why it's work for us, you know. But my whole philosophy is around work style.
Mm-hmm.
I think the people that I work with are so busy working to support a lifestyle, and they are always talking about work-life balance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I look at it as, well, you're living so much of your life at work. How about we call it work style and have the quality of your work, your presence at work, your effectiveness and impact and influence and income be just as important in your work and your work style as it is in your lifestyle?
Mm-hmm. I love this.
Yeah.
So now I
coined that term.
Stay with us and help me understand how that plays out.
Well, it goes back to that integrated methodology.
Yes.
Let me backtrack here. My company is Pegasus Pathways.
Mm-hmm.
I called the company Pegasus because I am a horse nut.
Mm-hmm.
And Pegasus in mythology was the winged horse who carried his rider to victory in battle with the gods. Well, so every day we go to work, and we're in battle. We're in a competitive environment. We're trying to keep up with technology. We're trying to get customers and retain employees and cultivate future leaders and all of this. And it's work. I mean, work can sometimes be a four-letter word.
Right.
Well, going back to my integrated methodology, I have dubbed my integrated methodology, in my terms, is Dare to Fly.
And I love that.
The DARE is an acronym. D is discovery of what you want, your values, who you are, what defines you, what drives you, what motivates you.
Mm-hmm.
A is awareness of your physical body and accessing your personal power. And that is that inner wisdom that you have, that inner knowing. Cultivating that, and then having your body, your awareness of your physical body so that it's always operating at peak performance. Then R is relationships. And I simply say this, it isn't who you know. It's how they feel about you that's important.
Right.
It's how to design conversations to build and cultivate relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the D-A-R. And then the E is everything else in your environment. Is the time, technology, climate, economy, you know, the politics, the licensing, the trends, all of those things that you can't control, but you have to keep responding to and adapting and being aware of how they may impact you and your world. So that's the DARE. And flying is setting the goals in all of those domains as well as the big picture goals, the visions and the goals that you want to have.
Mm-hmm. I love
that. All of that is, you know, brought down to you at work.
Mm-hmm. And let's say more about that awareness and the habits. What kind of habits do you try to get people to practice or experiment with in order to get that increased awareness?
There are so many. My coaching programs always involve three different aspects. I design practices for each of my clients,
mm-hmm.
exercises, and self-observation exercises. Now, practices can be simple as, and I always give the example of, it's like brushing your teeth.
Yeah.
Brushing our teeth. You know, and we're always combing our hair and grooming ourselves. Those are practices that we do every single day in order to maintain a standard.
Mm-hmm,
but there are other practices, and some of the practices that I teach almost every client is a sitting practice. Is how do they get quiet within so that they can hear the answers from within?
Mm-hmm.
How can they consolidate their energy rather than being stressed and running around like a chicken without their head? How can they sit, consolidate their energy, and be in that quiet place of self-knowing?
Mm-hmm.
From there, there's a lot of power that can come forth.
Oh, yes. Yes. I can only imagine. That's very powerful, Lillian. I've been so engrossed in hearing your story and your philosophy, I forgot to mention to our listeners that we'd love for them to join us if they have questions. So let me share the phone number. If you're listening live and you'd like to call in and ask Lillian Curry a question or get more information about her sitting practices or anything at all, please join us. The dial-in number is 424-243-9638. That's 424-243-9638. And our production person, Dr. Anna Melikan, is on the phone, and she'll take your call and get you in the queue to join Lillian and I, and we'd be happy to engage with you this afternoon. We'd actually love to engage with you. So if you're listening live, do call in and share with us your observations and get your questions answered by the famous Lillian Curry. Well,
and Catherine Halpin. Sorry.
You're too kind. So given that you have this fairly, I would say fairly intense coaching program, methodology, I'd be interested to know, Lillian, who are some of your ideal clients? Is it entrepreneurs? Is it business executives?
I have worked with both. And I've worked where they are individually hiring me, and
mm-hmm.
I've also worked with the executives where the company is hiring me for the executive who is so valuable to the company but needs some either sharpening or some honing of skills.
Right.
And because really it's not about what they do so much as how they are showing up at work,
uh-huh.
how they are impacting their world.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether or not I'm working with a business owner, it's not like I'm looking at his financials or
right.
his marketing plan. I'm helping
right.
him change his role according to the way he wants to be in
mm-hmm.
the future and have
mm-hmm.
his company grow up around him.
Mm-hmm.
And the executive is the same thing. So I call them intrapreneurs when I'm working with someone
mm.
in a company.
I love
is,
that.
In effect, they're responsible for the bottom line of their department or division.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to affect change within their department or division, as well as through the organization.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and they have to use those entrepreneurial skills that you work with them to develop.
I'm working with men and women. I don't have greater success with one than the other. My
mm-hmm.
clients tend to be in their mid-30s and older, although I have occasionally worked with people in their 20s.
Uh-huh.
I'm working with people that have already achieved a level of success and either want to continue the trajectory, or they've reached a plateau and what worked in the past isn't helping
mm-hmm.
them get beyond that plateau.
Yes, so often, all of us, I believe, have these cycles in life, and we have success, and then we plateau, and sometimes we need to shake things up to get to that next level, that next, like you said, trajectory, and
mm-hmm.
get propelled onto what's next for us.
Yes.
That's great. So given that you had this huge success before you were even a coach or called yourself a coach or got any coach training with your Fortune 100 executive, tell us about some of the successes that you've had since then. And what year did you get your training with New Ventures West? I know that was a long, long time ago.
I completed it, believe it or not. I went for my credential weekend in October 2001, a month
mm.
after 9/11.
Wow.
So I'll never forget that because it was, I'm getting on a plane in New York and I'm going across the country
mm.
because nothing's going to stop me from
wow.
completing this this achievement. So
wow.
I'm sorry, what was your question? What has
happened? My question was,
then?
Tell us, share with us some of your success stories. I know one of our code of ethics things with the ICF is that we don't break confidentiality, but just in generic terms, could you share with us some of the success stories you've facilitated since you've been an official coach?
Yes, and I will maintain everyone's anonymity. One of my great stories is that a woman who was actually referred to me by this gentleman that I was telling you about who changed my life, he referred this woman to me. She was approaching her 40th birthday. She had gotten wonderful job. She was really successful at her company. She was a marketing executive at an investment firm, and she just loved what she was doing. She loved that she was living in New York. She had moved
mm.
from a small town, and she was pretty much at the pinnacle of her success, but she wasn't yet 40.
Mm,
and she
wow.
just felt disillusioned, and everything looked perfect. Everybody would look at her and say, oh, my goodness, she's got it all made.
Uh-huh.
But so she came to me, and that first question is, well, what do you want? And she didn't know. She just
mm.
knew she didn't want what she had.
Mm.
And we slowly but surely, through practices and exercises and self-observation exercises, helped her to determine where her heart really wanted to take her.
Mm.
and we looked way down the road timeline-wise. And next thing you knew, she was looking, and I'm not a career coach, but she was looking and ended up with a huge job as an executive director of a major professional organization. Well, before that, the company that she was working with had her open up a new office on the West Coast. But now she was autonomous and independent and building up a whole new market for them. She built up that office and realized that she needed to get out of that industry altogether and found this job heading up a professional organization. And now she's building up membership and reviving an organization that was dormant just by living from her values, being a full expression of her authentic self.
Wow.
While doing those cutting-edge setting goals and holding people to higher standards and accountability.
Wow.
She's an amazing woman.
Congratulations. What a great story. And now she's able to make such a difference out there.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. That ripple effect, it's so delicious.
so delicious. That's an amazing story. And I would imagine that most of your clients have had that kind of rich, because I get the sense, Lillian, there's a richness to their work with you.
Yeah, I have to admit, I'm not the coach for the faint of heart. Because of the transitions and transformations that I have lived in my own life, whether I was looking for them or not, what I know is that life gets richer and fuller the more you insist on that from life.
Right.
If you're going to take the lazy way, if you're going to take the safe way or the easy way, there's so much that's not available. You know, I bought my first horse. You read this in my introduction. I bought my first horse at 55.
Mm.
And he's an Arabian show horse. And Catherine, this was the dream come true for the Brooklyn girl.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to redesign my work life, my daily life, my financial life in order to ride this horse. I had to take care of my body in a whole new way so that I could have the stamina.
Right.
And we win ribbons.
Isn't
you
that?
Can teach an, yeah, you can teach an old dog new tricks.
Right.
And anybody
that
argues for their limitations is like pushing their luck with me.
Right. So now, do you ride every day? Is that what you mean about rearranging
No. I ride 2 or 3 times a week when I can.
Uh-huh.
You know, because work still has to come first. But
Fine.
Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays are my days to ride. But I'm in training for the shows. And so you have to come in February. This coming February, I'll be at the big Arabian Horse Show at Westworld.
Oh, my gosh. That's
on
a huge
our show list.
People come from all over the
all
world.
All over the world, and we compete. And I've won a top 10 ribbon in that show.
Wow.
So, you know, dreams can come true, whether they're work dreams or life dreams or relationship dreams. If you can't see how to get there yourself, ask for help. That's what coaching is about. That's what mentor is about. Anything. Get the help. We can't do this alone.
Right. Get out of your comfort zone and get in action. I love it. I love that story about your horse, Lillian. That's very powerful.
Yes, you have to come and meet him. He's just a sweetie.
Yes. Well, I'm embarrassed to say I've never been to the Arabian horse shows, so I'd love to have that experience, too. I imagine it'd be very rich.
Oh, very rich. Some of the best people watching you can possibly imagine, and, of course, it's heaven on earth for me with all the horses around, but you'll have to come.
Uh-huh. Oh, my gosh. How exciting. Yes. Now, let's spend a little bit of time talking about the International Coach Federation and your involvement. And what I'm most interested to know, Lillian, is why you went after the PCC certification, given that you were already certified by New Ventures West, or you were at least going through their certification process, too. What benefit did you see of the International Coach Federation certification?
Well, I feel very strongly about this, Catherine, and I know that there are a lot of coaches out there without the ICF credentials.
Yeah.
But I determined that since I was going to do a career change at that stage of my life,
mm-hmm.
that I wanted to have a market differentiator, first of all. And
yeah.
for the first time in my life, now I have whoop-de-doo letters after my name.
Yes.
But I think that when I was going to coaching school in 2000-2001,
mm-hmm.
there was a lawsuit being taken up in Colorado, I believe it was.
Yes.
Where they wanted to license coaches. And the ICF very effectively fought that because we didn't want the government to get into our business. And they effectively fought it, and I thought, okay, I need to support an organization, a professional organization that's going to hold not only the government at bay, but hold us to higher standards.
Yes.
And
yes.
so I went for the ACC when I was able to. I went for the PCC, and now with what's happening with the ICF, I don't know when I'll be able to go for my MCC, which I know that you have, but that is the intention, is I want to hold myself to that higher standard, and when the public gets to understand that distinction, I want it to be ready.
Yes, I love that.
You know, when there's so many people out there that are, as I say, doing a lot of good work and getting paid a lot of money to do that good work, without the standard set of a professional organization, I just think that the companies may be questioning the quality of the work that they're getting because there's not a standard.
Right. I love how you put that. And it's a question of, you know, would you go to a doctor that wasn't licensed, or would you go to a CPA who hadn't maintained their professional standards? Business people wouldn't think of that. So is even with all of the good work that's being done by non-trained and non-certified coaches out there, I love how you put it, Lillian, that you wanted to be prepared so when the marketplace started to see that there was indeed a differentiator, and it's called certification, that you'd already have that highest
yes.
level of certification.
Exactly. And I think that the marketplace is getting more and more aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got my WBE 2 years ago. That's a woman-owned business enterprise, so technically
uh-huh.
I'm a minority firm. And when you start to have those conversations about what are your credentials, people are
yeah.
at least asking those questions now.
Yeah.
And they know that there's a difference between, you know, a master's or a PhD or some kind of social work degree versus coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, a lot of the major companies are sending their HR people and some of their top leaders into the coaching schools
mm-hmm.
so that they can take back coaching techniques into the companies.
Oh, yes. I think those are some of the smartest companies out there that are doing
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yes,
I just saw a survey, some results from Google. Google was having a more turnover, employee turnover than they wanted, and so they surveyed their employees, and the number one thing they wanted was to have their supervisor or manager be more coach-like.
Oh.
And that was so exciting to me that it's...
Isn't that amazing? And I wonder if they even know what that means, but the fact that they're using that word is just wonderful.
Right. They might not even... That's a very good point. I didn't even think of that. They might not even know the power of coaching, but they know they want to be encouraged, they want to be empowered, they want to be
right.
heard. I say it's a basic human need that we all have, and so few of us get that need met, which is to be heard, to really be heard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what those employees are asking for. So that's great that you're seeing HR professionals get themselves trained as coaches from our coach training
yep.
school.
But then they do the trainings. And I was brought into one major company where they had an internal coaching department.
Wow.
And, you know, where the coaches were trained. I don't know necessarily whether they were credentialed, but they brought me in to work with such a high-level executive where they were concerned about the confidentiality within the company.
Mm.
So they felt that they needed to bring an outsider in to work with that high-level executive.
Sure. That makes sense. Yeah.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that was exciting for you, I bet.
Because
you got
the most exciting engagements.
Yes, you get to see what they were doing internally.
Well, I didn't get to see what their coaching was internally, but this is another. If we have time for another quick story, I'd love to tell you this one.
Yeah, don't go ahead. We'd love to hear anything.
Well, this was a very top tier, you know, like second, third level down from the top of Bloomberg, and they brought me in because they had done a 360. For those of you who don't know what a 360 is, that's like an anonymous survey of people above, below, and colleagues to your sides of an anonymous feedback survey of your strengths, weaknesses, etc. And across the board, people came back saying this man's listening skills were abominable.
Mm.
And they brought me in to help him with that. And so we were working, and this is the kind of man that I had to make sure I had a full night's sleep the night before, because he was so sharp. Like, he would just, at rest, he was vibrating with energy. You know, he's just one of those characters. And a tall, lanky man, and at rest, he would kind of slouch in his chair, and everything was starched, pressed, everything, but slouched and kind of slinky. And when we were talking, you know, there was a certain amount of resistance at the beginning, and then you know, he started to ease up on that. But one day he took a phone call that he had told me he needed to take during our session, and I watched his body language during the session.
Mm-hmm.
And so I only heard a little bit of his conversation, but watched his body language, and when he hung up, he said, "Well, thank you very much. I needed to tell." I said, "Okay, let me tell you what I saw."
Mm-hmm.
I saw that you're really nervous, and that if you go into this meeting later on this afternoon that you just set with the kind of body language that I just saw, you will fail at what you're trying to accomplish.
Mm, that was
And now
powerful.
I had his attention.
Yeah.
Now I had his attention because what this was, now he started to tell me some of the details, was they were trying to avoid a litigation, and this meeting was going to happen with that. But by getting his attention with that, somehow in that same meeting, he started taking notes on his BlackBerry.
Oh.
And what was happening, where everybody said he wasn't listening, was he was listening so acutely that he took notes on his BlackBerry. But he was so unconscious about others' perceptions that he never told them that's what he was doing.
Right.
So they thought he was checking emails or texting somebody or doing anything else but listening.
Wow.
And that was really one of the simplest fixes. What we had to work on, of course, was his being unconscious of how others perceived him.
Right.
But that was just a fascinating thing of how technology was hindering his ability to relate to people.
Right. And if you hadn't been there face-to-face, you might not have been able to see all of that, put all those pieces of the puzzle together.
I would not have been able to leverage seeing his body language and how he was going to shoot himself in the foot if he went into that meeting without coming from a place of physical strength.
Right.
You know, just not from his posture and his voice and his modulation, et cetera.
Uh-huh. I love that. Well, I want to turn our call over to Anna because I believe we have a caller on the line. Is that correct, Anna?
Yes, we have Debbie Exner. I'm going to unmute you. Just a moment. You are on the air and you can do your question.
Thanks, Anna, and thanks, Debbie, for joining us.
Hi, Catherine. Debbie. Hi, Lillian. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good. I was intrigued, Lillian, by your discussion about designing practices for your clients. And you gave us an example of one that you suggest to every client. Can you give us an example of another one that might be specific to a particular client?
Well, you know, really it gets down to such basics. Debbie, I ask clients at the beginning about their daily practices, and that includes how much sleep they get, how much they eat and drink, whether or not they smoke, whether or not they go to church, you know, what their spiritual practices are. Because then I get to see the world through their eyes as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And despite how educated we are today about how much sleep we need and how much and what kind of foods we need to eat, etc., some people do not know that they need to incorporate that into their lives or how to do it. So I make it a practice, you know, do this so many times a week. They know it. They come up with the answers, and then I say, okay, here's your practice. The other things, but that can also be about exercising. Doesn't have to be doing the treadmill. It can also be play with your kids once a week, you know, or it can be, you know, doing gardening work once a week, or it can be listening to music. People who have put some of their passions and the things that make their hearts sing, listen to music, sing in the car, you know, do something. And when you can tap into that and give them permission to give that to themselves, their lives and are enriched, and their ability to contribute at work is much higher.
Mm-hmm. Great, thanks.
Fascinating.
I have another question for you personally, Lillian. What supported you in accomplishing buying your first horse? How did you navigate that? How did you manage to reach that goal? Obviously, it was it was a goal for quite a while.
Well, it really wasn't. I'll back up a little bit. Remember that I'm a snobby New Yorker. I lived in New York all of my life. I was never going to leave New York. And be careful when you say the word never, because I came to Arizona with seven other women, and we had this marvelous vacation in January 2004, and we went on a trail ride, which I had always done on vacations, is go on a trail ride. That was my little horse dose. And from that vacation, I heard that voice from that quiet place within that said, you know, you're working this hard to support a Manhattan lifestyle so you can escape for quiet and escape for nature and escape for horses. Why don't you just escape? So when I came back that summer and decided that I could live in the heat and ride a horse in the heat, and at that time the Phoenix metropolitan area was, you know, flourishing, I sold everything and came out here. Well, I started to take riding lessons, which I had been doing in New York, but it suddenly occurred to me, it was like one of those little, you know, I should have had a V8 kind of hits in the head.
Right.
Yeah.
I could buy a horse here, and I started to watch my finances to see how I would handle that, and I shopped around for a barn whose trainers were good with kids, adults, and horses. I wanted to be a pleasurable experience. So when it goes back to that question that I was talking about before, when you know what you want and you look at it from a multifaceted point of view, I ended up with the perfect barn and took lessons there for about a year. But when I went to that barn, and it was a show barn, the trainer said to me, you're welcome to come here, but if we start giving you lessons, at some point you need to buy a show horse. And when he said that, it was like that man, I don't know if you heard the story before, where this person said to me, you've missed your calling, you're a coach.
Yeah.
And the trainer said to me, you have to buy a horse. It was like, hello. Okay. So that's what happened. And it was just a natural evolution from there.
That's power. I love that.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the funny part of that story is my trainer, when I told him I was ready financially to buy the horse, he went and started looking, and they found Casanova in outside of Akron, Ohio. And they said, okay, we have to go. We'll go and test him out. I said, I'm not going. And they said, well, why not? I said, because I know nothing about buying a horse, and I'm going to fall in love with him whether he's good for me or not. So you go, you let him, you figure it out, and they brought him home for me.
I love that.
I was going to be like a little, I was going to be a seven-year-old. If I didn't like the horse, please. They were not going to want to see me fly like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Well, I can relate, Lillian. I was, as a native New Yorker, though I spent my time in Queens, not in Manhattan. I'm not all my time, but I lived in Queens and spent a lot of time in Manhattan. But I also grew up with that attitude of, why would anybody ever leave New York? Everything's here, you know?
Right.
First time I moved to someplace a little, there actually was a house down the road from me that had horses in Delaware. And I was like, wow, this is so cool.
Yeah, they are.
There are other things besides what's in New York. You know, New York's cool, but there are other things. Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Like deserts and mountains and sun and, you know.
Right.
And I go back to New York regularly because I have family there. I have clients there. And so I always look at it as going back and getting my edge sharpened. You know, I go back there and I walk faster and I talk faster and I go, it's like I'm in a time warp, like I never left. Except the longer I'm away, the more it changes. So, changes.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Well, Deb, thank you so much for calling in.
You're welcome.
And engaging with us. You're such a faithful participant in our Blog Talk Radio show. And we are so
thank you, Deb. It's good hearing your voice.
Yeah, nice hearing you too. And enjoying the interview.
Yeah, thanks. Lillian is full
right
of
now.
Stories. Full of good stories. Well, Lillian,
you are too, Catherine. So I should interview you one of these days.
Yes, let's make a plan to do that. I would love that.
Yeah, we'll do the reverse.
right. We had back in September, the famous Tamara Stark interviewed me, and it was great. And I really appreciated that. But I'd love to be interviewed by you too. That's wonderful.
Oh, good. I'd love to do that.
Yes.
We'll drill down.
Yes, I'm going to hold you to that.
Okay, good. Anytime.
Just another minute or two, and I just want to take a minute and before we close out the show and remind our listeners of our upcoming shows. We'll have Quinn McDonald on January 20th at 2 p.m. Mountain Time right here on our Blog Talk Radio show, Coach Conversations. In February, we're going to have Karen Sands, who will be speaking at our local ICF chapter that same month, and she'll be our guest. And then on March 16th, that's February 17th, on March 16th, we're going to have the famous Marcia Reynolds. And Marcia's a Phoenix-based, internationally acclaimed coach and was the president of the International Coach Federation. And Marcia and I knew each other in the early 1990s here in Phoenix before either of us heard about coaching. We knew each other. We served on a board of directors for a startup nonprofit together, and so that'll be fascinating to get
She's
to reconnect.
A wonderfully dynamic woman, isn't she?
Oh yes. And speaking of dynamic women, Lillian, I don't want to be intrusive, but I want you to say a little bit about your title of philanthropist because I have a lot of passion around philanthropy. So what's your
I'm very active in my Rotary Club, so I'm right now head of membership development there. I've served on the board and will continue to serve on the board. I was just reelected. I also put together trail rides annually for raising money for the Black Stallion Literacy Foundation, which gives kids the books, the Black Stallion, and give them horse experiences. I also support Gabriel's Angels by putting together two tables at their annual fundraising breakfast. And, you know, if we don't give back to our community, we have to make our world a better place. It does start with the business people. You do have to follow the money, and that's why
that's
I do this.
Right.
Just
oh, that's so great. I love that.
Yeah.
Love knowing about that aspect of you. I knew that you were a Rotarian, but I did not know about all the other fundraising activities, but that's magnificent. I say we can't rely on the government anymore. We have to support the nonprofits, the civic organizations, the churches and the neighborhoods, even at the neighborhood level, I think we have to give each other microloans because there are people living in our neighborhoods that could benefit from a $50 loan or a $500 loan to start a business.
Exactly.
So I love what you're sharing. Well, thank you so much, Lillian, for being our guest today and sharing all your wonderful stories. And thank you for all of our listeners for listening in. We appreciate your support, and we look forward to gathering again on January 20th with Quinn McDonald on Coach Conversations with the International Coach Federation's Blog Talk Radio Show. Thank you so much, and thank you, Anna, for all that you did to produce this show.
Thank you so much, Kathy.